Session number 16059, John Court, Reel 9.
Mr. Court, Reel 9. I think you're telling me that it was while you were in Fedaville that some New Zealand infantrymen got into your tank.
In the tank, yes.
Bombardment.
Yes. But, you know, we found that they became very nervous. They didn't like the idea of being shut in. So, you know, very quickly they asked to get out again. They felt they'd rather take their chance under the tank than inside the tank. I'll be honest with you, I can't remember what happened, but I believe they went up into the hills in Fedaville where there were a lot of machine gun pockets. They were dug into the hillside. And they went up the first time, and they were thrown off by the Germans. But I don't know how true this is, but I was told that they took prisoners, and they were forced over the edge of the cliffs. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. Whether it was just to make you hate the Germans a little more, I don't know. But anyway, they went through the next night. I remember we stood too at night time. And they went through, and it was rather eerie, because they went through in absolute quietness, and they went up into the hills, and apart from, and occasionally you'd hear a burst of a breeder, nothing else. We were told next morning the hills were ours. So they went in and they did their job. And I did actually go up there with Barnes and Skeets, because we were together then, and we went up into the hills there, and it was marvellous they had actually gotten, because they dug right back into the hills quite deeply, and they'd sandbagged the front and rocks and everything, and they got these machine guns mounted. I can only assume that they'd got, you know, cross lines of fire that could take anything out, and the fact they'd taken it in one evening I think was marvellous. It showed the true good English infantrymen had really done their job. That was fantastic. And we stayed in Fedaville for a while. The only other thing that I can remember about that was nothing to do with the war, but and that was the fact that we found a German half track still in running condition, and Skeets, being a very, very mad member of the community, said, "Come on, let's go for a ride in this half track." And we drove to Karawan in this half track, this German half track, and found the Holy City and had a half a day there and drove back. And, we were put on the carpet for driving this bloody half track, but I think it was marvellous that we weren't shot up or nobody, but we were given a good telling off. But I think the old man was quite taken back by the fact that we had gone and use this half track to visit Karawan. But I can't remember much else about that. They started doing trips to into Tunis, day trips, you know, to visit Tunis. They opened up a big not a holiday camp, but a camp for rest at the end of Cap Bon. I never went on one of these trips to Cap Bon, but some of the fellows did. I was quite content to stay. I mean, as far as I was concerned, the war was over, and I was quite happy to sit beside the tank and write my letters. I mean, I wouldn't have done any more. Well, I suppose they put more on, like shows and on at the camp. But it's funny, after you've been in the desert for a while, it doesn't really make a lot of difference. They put a show on at what's the big amphitheatre on the coast? Not Carthage. Can't remember. I remember they Ensor put a show on for us, and they had the Dagenham Girl Pipers. I remember that, or some of them, and one or two, but. Again, it's funny how your mind works. They had MPs there, and the artists came from their caravans. I call them caravans, like their
trailers.
And they walked along. You weren't allowed anywhere near them. You were kept, oh, I don't know, 10, 15 yards from them. There's all these MPs, and they walked along. They smiled and waved to us, but you weren't allowed to talk to them. It's you know, as just as an ordinary soldier, it would have been lovely just to have spoken to a white woman, to you know, but no, you were kept well away. So that was, and I was trying to think. There were one or two. There was a singer, English singer. There was some Scaven Gold Pipers, and there was another little play they put on. It was very good, actually, very, very good indeed. You know, as I say, you were so far from them in this huge amphitheatre that, you know, it was unreal. Things did seem unreal after a while out there. But, so as I say, I wasn't really worried about going there. I was quite happy to stop there. And then we handed our tanks over and we came back down to...
Who took the tanks over from you?
I can't remember. Some of the regiment, I believe, stayed in Tripoli because I think... I'm not quite sure now whether it was King George V or whether it was... Churchill came out and took a victory parade. We moved down to a bay just south of Homs. It was on absolute virgin a bay. There wasn't, apart from a few palm trees, and we put these tents down first of all, and no, we had our tanks in because we put the tents down beside the tanks. And in the middle of the night, we could hear this scrabbling. And I thought, what the heck? And there were a few Arabs around. The first thing I thought about, you know, someone's trying to pinch something. Instead of which, there were these huge white crabs. And they're white. It's terrible looking things. And evidently they live in the base of the palm trees. And they dig themselves up. And they were coming up inside the tents. And until we got rid of the tanks, that's what made me think. We slept in the tanks rather than sleep with these blessed... they're horrible. They didn't look like real crabs. They looked like, you know, just a greyish white colour. So we didn't... as I say, we slept... Then we handed the tanks over. And I can't... but we just stayed there for quite a while.
Did you know what was like to happen to you next? Did anyone...
We all thought that we would be going to Italy. We felt we'd be going to Italy. That was very strong. And as I say, about the time they started doing the courses, because you know the last thing I wanted to do was break away from the third.
Had you got to know anything?
No, when I think, I mean, it's just stupid to say this, but you see, to us, they were still
the donkey wallopers.
They are still cavalry. I mean that we were all doing the same job, and looking back now, it is a silly way of looking at it, but I always felt somehow that the COs of tank regiments were a much more, how can I put it? Not stable, that's the wrong word to use, but they thought, obviously, again, this is wrong, but they thought more of their men, but this is silly to say this, but I felt that, whether this was an impression that because of cavalry, it's charge. I mean, because you hear so many times of these cavalry wallers saying, right, you know, we've got a point to reach, charge. Okay, we lose a dozen tanks. I get two there. That's all I'm concerned with. I've taken the point. And this is always in the back of a tank man's mind. It's very silly, I suppose, to think this way. But that's it. That's just the attitude I think most Royal Tank Regiment people felt. And I mean, let's face it, without there was many cases of this where cavalry still thought they were cavalry, and they, although they had tanks under them, they still thought they could charge. And it cost an awful lot of lives. And, you know, all those sort of things tot up in a person's mind when they're thinking about joining a cavalry regiment. But obviously, I mean, loyalty, I dare say the loyalty in the cavalry regiment is exactly the same as in a tank regiment. You know, they wouldn't go anywhere else but cavalry. No, the staffs and not yeomanry were very good regiments. They certainly, you know, seemed to play their part well. And I think we made a very good brigade. So, but we just didn't, I just didn't fancy leaving the 3rd. So that was it. But, and eventually we left there. We had a chap called Alec Ingram, and he was a commercial artist, a very, very good artist. And he had his brother who was in, I believe his brother was in C Squadron. I believe, I may be wrong at this. But anyway, he did ask his brother to be, I'm not quite sure whether his brother came into the regiment. But anyway, he asked his brother to come so he could keep an eye on him. He was the older brother. And unfortunately, his brother's tank was hit and his brother was killed. And he did a drawing. He was fantastic. He could put a complete scene on a sheet of paper in next to no time, and he did a whole drawing of the battle, his brother's tank burning the flames, and all the other tanks in battle formation. Fantastic man. And we built at that little cove in De Salafons. We went to one of the local towns and grabbed hold of a lot of furniture and built ourselves a little community hall, and he did all the decorating inside. You know, he did all the murals and that, and he was great. On the way home from North Africa, he did a charcoal head and shoulders of me, which I treasured, which I let my mother have. When my father died, I went down to home, and my mother, bless her, she didn't know what time of day it was, and she had given away a lot of my sister's things, and I searched around. I'd given my father a leather wallet, which made a camel skin, it was embroidered with a camel on the front, which I'd also bought out there. That was all missing. My portrait of my charcoal, which Alec had done for me, that was gone. So it's a great shame. And Alec, unfortunately, during the Normandy campaign, was badly injured and smashed both his hands up. So he had to give up as an artist. And he took another profession up. He devised some special angling equipment, and he went down to live in Cornwall and made up business up there, which his son is still running now down in Cornwall, which is great. But Alec died 2 years ago.
Did you first hear then that you weren't going to Italy and you were going to back to Northwest Europe?
Well, we didn't, quite honest. No, we were still thinking we would be going over to Italy. And
did you have any idea of what you might encounter when you got to Italy? Any expectations?
No, not really. I suppose we just thought it would be, well, still tank battles, but on a different sort of terrain, you know. Nearly all the regiment had gone down by road down to Alex, or just outside of Alex, to the pyramids. And the few of us that were left behind, we went up to Tunis, and they put us on board boat at Tunis. Which I believe it was a German boat, a very rusty old boat, which I believe was a supply vessel of the Grasse Bay. And we joined a convoy going down the Med, there was just a few of us. There was a Monitor that had been torpedoed in the back, and that was fantastic. With the back end, you know, a Monitor had just got the two main guns at the front, and it was unbelievable that a boat could sail like that, and it was going along. And we had a sub scare, and this old thing that we were on, I think its top speed was about 8 knots. The engineers took us down in the engine room and showed us the German. It was a motor vessel, and he took us down into the prop where the prop shaft was turning, because everything was in German. But that had bad luck. It was going to come back to England on the next run, but it was torpedoed, so it didn't make it. And we arrived back just out, as I say, by the pyramids there, and we stayed there for a while. The whole regiment that was, and we just did ordinary parade ground, you know, marching, and that's it. Nothing. We had no tanks, and then they moved us up to Alex, to the docks. They put us on board the New Amsterdam. Yeah, New Amsterdam, and I think that was the closest I've ever known to an army mutiny in my life, because they crammed us in that boat, and we were right down in the holds, and once they put the covers on, and I don't know how many were on board, but it was absolutely chock-a-block, and nobody seemed to bother about us. We had biscuits. The food was atrocious. We had biscuits, and this is, I mean, you read about it in storybooks. I never thought it would ever happen. You broke the biscuits, and the weevils came out onto the tables. And at night time, it was unbelievably, it was like an oven down below. And if anything, if we'd been hit, there was no way any of us could have got out, because it was only just the one gangway up. But what annoyed us was that the officers and we had a lot of nurses on board, were up on deck, and we were allowed so many up at a time to be allowed to go up on deck, whereas the officers and these nurses were playing I don't know what you call it, with the horses. You show a number and then you push the horse along on rails, you know. And I think it was the captain, or we pulled into Taranto, I think it was. I think it was Taranto we pulled into. And we came out of there and went to another Italian port. Anyway, they said that we'd be unloading. And we stood there for 2 days. And then suddenly they said, no, you're staying on board. We're picking up another convoy and you're coming home. And so we came home.
Still just in the same conditions.
Yeah, same conditions. But once we got round and moving up into cooler, you know, up into the Atlantic, it wasn't so bad. But all the time we were in the Med, it was terrible. It really was. I've never known conditions like it. It's unbelievable. I never thought they'd put a British soldier into that, but they did. And as I say, if anything had happened, there was no way any of us could have got out. That was atrocious.
Did anyone attempt to do anything about the bad conditions?
Well, it's the only time that I've known a captain of a ship who actually came up over the hailer and said, in very diplomatic terms, that he was very proud to have British soldiers on board, but he felt disgusted the conditions under which we were had been placed, and also the fact that the officers had not cared so much about the men as he would have liked to have seen. He was being very diplomatic, but he was giving them a bit of a rollicking, you know, to let them know that he had noticed the conditions. But no, it was bad, very bad. Well, we were home by then.
Oh, you
that was home, yes, yes. That. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, they gave us a great welcome up at Greenock. Yes, but...
So far, you've said very little about officers, and it seems you had very little to do with them.
Well, as far as the Third Tank is concerned, you couldn't have wished for a better bunch. I mean, they were all good. McPherson, he was my young officer. The only thing I had about Mac was, I believe he was a friend of Stewart's, but the only thing I had about Mac was he used to smoke one of these huge, what they call them, meerschaum pipes, and he used to say, And my name's Alfred John, but everybody calls me John, but he used to call me Alfred. Come on, young Alfie, he used to say. And we used to pull the tarpaulin down the side of the tank and give him his due. He used to do his full whack. He was good. Well, this is a great thing. Most of the officers, didn't they? They did their whack, and it was this is why they were liked. But we used to get this tarpaulin down the side, and we used to put our beds under the tarpaulin, and he would light this really great misha. It used to fill the place up. And, of course, as a non-smoker, God, I used to say, Mac, for goodness sake, put that pipe out. But again, you say, this again is something that was great. Like Monty, a steward. To me, he was Monty. And to his crew members, he was Monty. You could do this. I mean, obviously, no one's stupid enough that if another officer's there, or if there's a senior officer there, you address them as you should be addressed, obviously. But when you're just on your own, then you're back to, just a nickname, which is great. And I feel it's a great thing to bond people together. But, as I speak, I find all our officers were very, very good indeed.
Was McPherson with you all the way through?
No. Mac left us. He left us after North Africa. I don't know what happened to him. Perhaps Stuart knows. I don't know. Because Stuart, funny enough, Stuart's... I know he went to South Africa after the war, but perhaps
but
Stuart
was
knows.
Was he all the way in North Africa from when you joined?
No. Again, I think he joined us... We were well up in the desert when Mac joined us. No, he was a newcomer. We'd lost a few officers, so... He was one of the newcomers.
And did they all have the same sort of style of leadership?
I would say so, yes. Yes, I think they were all pretty good. I would say we taken in all, I think we were very, very lucky with, as speakers I find, in the third tanks, we had good NCOs and we had good officers. And I think that's what made a good regiment. The only time you get what I call something, I suppose it comes down to discipline, you see, but it comes a time, I think, when in an ordinary soldier's life, when even he questions why a certain thing is done. Like, when we were at Holmes, now, we were miles from there, well, the war was over. And our CO had two posts put 20 yards apart in front of his tent, and he had stones gathered and made white, and he had a 24-hour stick guard up and down outside of his tent. And we had a stick guard, and we used to have a parade in the evening, and then he used to come up, and he was so critical. Well, you know, even if you put a vest on, and you stand there in the blazing sun while you're being
inspected.
You can't help you can feel it trickling down your back, and you know very well. You hold your like that, so your shirt will come off your back. You know very well if it touches, it's going to show. And the time out of number, he used to tap you on the shoulder, and you've got sweat on your shirt. There's no way you could stop it. You know, you're standing out there in the blazing sun, and to march up and down in front of a CO's tent, to me, I mean, all right, it may be discipline, but that is not necessary. If they gave us a job of cleaning tanks or doing courses on engines or gunnery, even though we were drivers, give a refresher course on that, I could understand, to keep your mind alert and also to give you something to do. Or even just, I suppose, you could order me marching. But just for a guard, no, I don't think it was necessary. But that's just my opinion. I mean, again, it might have been... I think this officer, this CO, went over the top of it. And I don't think, if I remember rightly, that's the only, again, another time that I've known where men have put their names down as a petition to get him moved. And it was handed into the RSM.
Did it have any result?
No.
How did the RSM react when he received this petition?
I don't know. I wasn't there when it was handed to him, but I do believe from what I can gather that he was in favour for us. He just went over the top. I don't think that.
Did you have the same regimental commanding officer all the way through from start to finish?
No, who did we have? We had Pyman. CO, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, we had Pyman. Pyman was good. He was a good man. We had Silvertop. God, I can't remember the other names. Oh, my memory's terrible. Silvertop was a little bit hard. I mean, if a tank was hit, he wouldn't say, how is the crew? He would say, is that tank serviceable? He was a little bit that way, you know. But Pyman was good. If we got any sticky points, I mean, we would get to a stage maybe where we were coming up to a situation where maybe Pyman might think, well, I could lose a few tanks here. Maybe the opposition is a bit bigger than I need. And he would pull you back and he'd say, let's send for our feather friends. And sure enough, overcame the Hurricanes and they'd do a shoot up. And then he would move. He'd always make another move before he put his tanks to a... mind you, only time that... I always remember once out the Middle East with... We used to have canisters about this big. And they used to throw out orange smoke. Anyway, we... the Germans were using a similar sort of device for recognition to the aircraft. Anyway, I know that... I think Pyman had pulled us back and we were waiting and he said our feathered friends are coming along and so everybody was ready to get ready with the smoke, so we tossed out these orange canisters and overcame the Hurricanes and they did a swoop over the top of us, straight over the top of the Germans, turned round, came round and gave us a clouting up the back. So we lost a couple of tanks to them. But
what were they using? Rockets.
Yes, but...
Did you frequently have close air support?
Yes, they were pretty good. Not until the latter part. We used to get... I mean, they said we had air supremacy in the North Africa all the time from Alamein, but we used to get a bit of... a fairish bit of stick from Stukas and that. We didn't have the support that I thought. Mind you, the desert's a big area. I mean, maybe they were helping somebody else out. I mean, I should think that our convoys needed more coverage than what we did. I mean, in those days, I mean, we were quite happy out in the desert there. I mean, you might lose one tank But the possibility of being hit by Stukas, it's fewer. I mean, it's soft skins all the time that will get the brunt of the damage. And I'll say the echelons and also the convoys coming up, they got a bit of a hammering. But
did you know? Were there any other instances where you were attacked by friendly aircraft that you know of?
No,
that was the only time,
yes. I can remember one time they came over, they dropped a lot of butterfly bombs. I remember that, these butterfly bombs all over the place. That was a bit dicey. But no, I can't. Of course, the further we went up, the more airfields we were using, the more cover we had, so... You know, towards the latter part, it was quite good. But I wish I could remember more about North Africa because, I can't remember. It's so long ago, isn't it? this is the point. It's, you know, Suttle Shamir's, Homs, Derna, Tripoli, all these places, you can remember the main names, but certain areas, I mean, things which give a lasting impression. And I always thought one day I would go out to North Africa again. In fact, there was a friend of mine, an Irishman, I used to call him the Mad Irishman, after the war, and I met up with him in a pub, and he said, what are you doing? So I said, well, I'm working the gas board. So he said, got a better idea. He said, you did a mines course, didn't you? So I said, yes. He said, well, he said, I'm going back out to North Africa. He said, good money. He said, fantastic money. He said, we got a WOG labour force clearing minefields. He said, what about it? I said, you've got to be joking. I said, you know, it's different on soil, but I said, sand's moving about all over the place. I said, no, not for me. He said, you don't want... Anyway, I did have a letter from him, and he said, fantastic. He said, you know, doing a good job. And that was it. Never heard any more from him. So, and I don't know, he lived up the Midlands somewhere, so I don't know what happened to him, whether he blew himself up or not, but... No, I didn't. I never fancied removing mines in the desert because they moved about too much.
What impression did Britain make on you when you got back? You've been out for a couple of years, haven't you?
Ruddy cold. yes, we didn't when we got back.